Hi, everyone. Welcome to Flock Talk. I'm Aaron Morgan.
And I'm Jordan Sloggett.
And we work for the farmer members of the Ontario Sheep Farmers Organization.
This week, we are discussing mastitis with Shannon Walsh from HIPRA.
Welcome, Dr. Shannon Walsh. Thank you so much for joining us today. Will you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So currently, I'm a technical services vet at HIPRA Animal Health. So HIPRA is a globally renowned company specializing in vet immunology products. So what that really means is primarily vaccines. This is something that the company decided back in 2009. So they produced a variety of products, and then they decided that the future of animal health is really prevention. So they decided to put all the research and development into prevention products. So I come from a background in large animal practice, primarily dairy cattle, simply because that's the demographic that we have around here, but also some small ruminant practice as well, which I really enjoyed and is something that I continue to try to stay really abreast of. So now my role, kind of two different things. So one, of course, is to provide some support on the product front. So just helping provide some guidance on how to best use these products in flocks. And then on the other side, I do some consulting essentially as well. So I collaborate with veterinarians across Ontario and Atlantic Canada, mainly to troubleshoot udder health concerns and help with enhancing milk quality.
Fantastic.
Shannon, can you describe some of the most common causes of mastitis in sheep and how those might vary between different farming practices?
Yeah, so mastitis being inflammation of the mammary gland, there's a variety of things that can cause that. Of course, we're most familiar with infection, but injury and systemic illness can also cause inflammation. But infection is the most common, so we'll kind of focus on that. The anatomy of the teat forms a barrier to invading pathogens. So there's a muscular sphincter at the teat opening, which helps to physically block pathogens from entering the teat. And then furthermore, the teat canal is lined with keratin. So that's the same protein found in hair and nails. And it has some antimicrobial properties. So a healthy teat is naturally resilient against infection. When mastitis comes into play, there's kind of three different scenarios. So the first would be exposure of the teat to high levels of bacteria. So that would come from manure contamination from the environment or unhygienic milking practices, that sort of thing. Second would be injury to the teat. So for example, in a meat production setting with lambs regularly nursing from the ewes, or in a dairy setting, milking equipment that maybe doesn't receive regular maintenance, which includes checking for appropriate vacuum and pulsation levels. Those things can injure the teat end and then make the ewe more susceptible to mastitis. And then the third thing that kind of kicks in as well is inadequate immune response. So various stressors that cause immune suppression will make a ewe more susceptible. So this is why high-producing dairy ewes or meat use with multiple lambs tend to be more susceptible, and the nutrition would play a role in that as well. In terms of specific pathogens, most mastitis is caused by bacterial infections, although viruses and yeast can also play a role. The most common bacterial culprits are Staphylococcus species. So Staphylococcus aureus, or Staph aureus as it's commonly referred to, is the most common cause of clinical mastitis. It's highly contagious, almost impossible to cure. And coagulase negative staph, known as non-aureus staph, is the most common cause of mild clinical mastitis or subclinical mastitis in sheep and goats. And we'll talk a little bit about more about them, I suspect, a little later in this conversation. And then there's some other players as well. So Mannheimia, which is transmitted by the mouths of lambs while they're nursing, and environmental streptococcus or environmental streps, as they're called, are common causes as well.
Excellent. So what are the early signs? How do we spot mastitis before it becomes a big issue? And how should farmers be managing just, you know, their pens, their penning to make sure that there's, you know, no issues with mastitis?
Yeah, great question. And so mastitis is a big deal. So catching it early is important. And what does early really mean. So most of us are familiar with some of the signs of clinical mastitis. So mild clinical mastitis would involve a change in milk. So this is why we force strip during milking, because then it's a way we can detect subtle changes in the milk, like little flakes and clots. And then you can graduate to moderate clinical mastitis, where the half is either hard and swollen, can be warm to the touch, or over time, if it's a chronic case of mastitis, the teat can actually shrink due to the formation of scar tissue. And then your severely affected ewes just look sick. So either they're off feed, they might be down, et cetera. So we're familiar with those, but mastitis actually starts at the subclinical level. So this means that the animal looks otherwise healthy, but her body is actually already responding to the infection. So subclinical mastitis is important because while it's invisible, so to speak, unless we go specifically looking for it, it can significantly affect milk yield, milk quality, so total fat and protein, and lamb growth as well. It's also much more prevalent than clinical mastitis on farm and has a much greater economic impact. So when we talk about early signs of mastitis, I would argue that the first step is to try to detect subclinical mastitis. And we can do that through a couple ways. So one way is an increase in somatic cell count or by doing cultures. Now for listeners who may not be familiar with somatic cell count or SCC, so this is the total number of epithelial cells, so the inner lining of the milk-producing tissue of the udder, plus the number of white blood cells in a milliliter of milk. So even healthy milk will have some level of somatic cell present. So from both the natural turnover of epithelial cells within the udder tissue kind of sloughing off, and then we also have some resident white blood cells that hang out in the udder waiting to respond to threats. So this is why you'll never see a zero SCC. Now, when bacteria invade the udder, the resident white blood cells will call in recruits, and then we see an influx of white blood cells and an increased SCC. So some intelligent person figured out that this happens, and therefore SCC can be used as an indirect measure of udder health. An interesting piece of trivia on SCC. It's more precise in cattle than it is in sheep and goats. So cows produce milk through what's called merocrine secretion, meaning their epithelial cells will spit out little milk lobules, but then sheep and goats will produce milk through apocrine secretion, meaning that a little bit of the epithelial cell actually pinches off containing the milk lobules. So in sheep and goats, the SCC is naturally higher to begin with.
Okay.
Which is interesting. So to monitor subclinical mastitis on farm from a standpoint of SCC, a couple of ways we can do this. So the most accessible, the cheapest, the easiest to do is a CMT test. So the California mastitis test. There's lots of online resources that demonstrate how to perform this test. But in essence, the kit comes with a paddle and a purple solution. More reliable than using the CMT test, although it is still useful, is to actually have a somatic cell count in your counter. So you can either submit milk samples in Ontario here, either to DHI or AHL at the Animal Health Lab at the University of Guelph. They offer SCC testing, or there's actually farms that will invest in on-farm portable cell counters.
So before we do any testing, if we're talking about a meat flock, so we're not going to be milking the sheep, but we're producing meat sheep. Are there things that we can do just with cleanliness of bedding alone or other management practices that will prevent mastitis from occurring or will reduce the likelihood of getting mastitis in our ewe flock?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think likely to a little later in the conversation, we'll circle back to talk about management practices in general. But cleanliness absolutely is the number one thing that we want to be looking at in terms of preventing mastitis, for sure.
Amazing.
So yeah.
Shannon, it sounds like our ability to screen for and spot mastitis has really changed and improved over the years. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to How has the approach to actually treating mastitis in sheep evolved in recent years? Are there any new treatments or preventative measures that have been proven particularly effective?
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, there's definitely many tried and true preventative management strategies that have, like you said, been around forever. In terms of new developments in the realm of mastitis prevention, I know genetics has been a big topic in dairy cattle. I believe at this time we don't have sufficient work in dairy sheep yet to say how useful certain udder health associated genetic markers will be in the future. But someone like Dr. Chris Bushbeck would really be able to speak to this further because she's done so much work with genetics and dairy sheep. What I can speak to in terms of new developments, new technologies is mastitis vaccination. It's a pretty remarkable tool. So VIMCO is a staph vaccine. It's on label for goats, but it's also been extensively used in sheep under veterinary prescription. So it's had popular success worldwide, used in both the sheep and goat dairy industry to reduce the impact of mastitis in flocks, and then also on the meat sheep side to improve lamb growth. So some of the health and economic benefits of using a vaccine like this is that it would build flock immunity against the most common causes of mastitis, such as Staph aureus and non-aureus staph. It reduces subclinical mastitis, somatic cell count, bacterial count in milk. It reduces clinical mastitis. It reduces shedding and therefore transmission among flock mates. And it is safe in both lactating and pregnant animals. So combining vaccination with already other excellent preventative management strategies, it's just one way that you can improve your flock's udder health that much more. The vaccine's been available in Canada for about 10 years, which is a short period in the animal health product world. And there's a small team in Canada here, so we're just still working to get the word out. But if you're interested in learning more, I encourage you to reach out to your veterinarian. Some vets aren't overly familiar with this product yet. So if that's the case, I encourage them to reach out to me either on LinkedIn or you can email me at shannon.walsh@hipper.com. And I'm happy to be an additional resource.
Fantastic. So mastitis obviously impacts milk production and quality. Mm-hmm. And also I'm sure it has an impact on raising lambs in a meat flock. Can you discuss the long-term effects of mastitis on a ewe's productivity and the overall performance of the flock?
Absolutely. So we talked about how when an intramammary infection occurs, white blood cells are recruited to the udder. So these white blood cells are very effective, but they're also quite destructive. So the threat may be eliminated, but the udder tissue takes a hit as well. So an injured udder means that the tissue produces less milk yield and lower total solids, and that you may never, in fact, be completely the same again. So in the dairy industry, we lose the value of that lost milk that could have been. And that decrease in yield also means an increase in relative feed costs because now we're feeding a less productive ewe. Also, a ewe with mastitis is frequently culled earlier in life than a ewe has not had mastitis. So if she's a young ewe, she may not have even yet covered the cost of raising herself. And if she's an older ewe, these are really productive girls. So then we're forced to replace her with a younger, less productive ewe. And not only that, we're replacing her with a ewe that could have otherwise been sold as replacement stock. So, and this is ignoring the cost of discarded milk and labor and meds and vet fees associated with treating mastitis. Or the cost of disposing a ewe in those severe cases where they die. On the flip side, so in meat sheep, when total solids are effective, lambs aren't getting that same level of nutrition. We lose out on growth performance. And then we also have the same problems, such as increased feed costs, premature culling, and treatment costs, et cetera.
Shannon, how do environmental factors and other seasonal changes influence the rate of mastitis in sheep?
Yeah, so summer heat and humidity often result in a spike in mastitis because these conditions promote bacterial growth. So the best advice I can give is stick to your prevention plan. Increase the frequency that bedding is cleaned out and replenished. Do what you can to help animals stay cool, which will help reduced stress on their immune system. So whether that's providing shade and a grazing system or adjusting ventilation velocity, air velocity rates, et cetera, inside the barn, you can expect water consumption to go up. So make sure that there's adequate access per animal so that submissive ewes aren't being bullied out by dominant ewes. You can consider options for fly control because they can act as a vector for mastitis. And then if you're considering using a mastitis vaccine, the time to start is now because animals who are heat stressed have a lower immunological response to vaccines. So it's best to prime them prior to the heat and then booster at regular intervals as directed to help them get through that period.
Excellent. So then when we're talking about nutrition, does it play a role in prevention and management of mastitis in sheep? And are there specific dietary recommendations that you have that might reduce the risk?
Sure. So balanced nutrition, using appropriate feedstuffs for the stage of production is important for maintaining a healthy immune system, which will then affect mastitis. And I know selenium and vitamin E play a role. I will, however, admit that nutrition is not my specialty. So you're better off talking to a nutritionist with a small ruminant focus. I know you had Courtney Vreens from Vreens Nutrition on the show, and often the feed mill that you're working with can provide other recommendations in terms of who to speak with.
Excellent.
Shannon, thanks so much for joining us today. Is there anything else you'd like to speak to our audience of sheep producers about mastitis or about anything else that you're passionate about in the sheep world?
Sure. So I guess I could have dove a little more into, you had asked me about management practices in terms of preventing mastitis outbreaks. So you'd mentioned bedding in particular. And while some of the tools that we talked about in terms of detecting mastitis earlier, like cell counters or that sort of thing, they might be more amenable to larger flocks who can spread out the cost. Fortunately, the principles remain the same regardless of the size of the flock. So we can split prevention into four broad categories. The first, and I would argue sometimes the most important, is environment. Mm-hmm. So this is where it really comes down to a clean environment where ewes can eat, drink, and rest comfortably. So considerations around bedding and feeding and watering, ventilation and manure handling. And I know that Ontario Sheep Farmers has a really nice handout available online that I found. That walks you through considerations around facilities and equipment. And the Canadian Code of Practice, which can be found online, also is a useful resource. You may need to look at crutching wool as needed to reduce manure contamination. And then the final piece of the puzzle is health management practices. So these are often developed in conjunction with your veterinarian and would include things like so those protocols for detecting subclinical and clinical mastitis, record keeping, treatment protocols for those ewes who do develop mastitis, dry off protocols, which could include nutritional strategies, use of intramammary antibiotics and teat sealants, vaccination protocols, including but not limited to mastitis vaccines, calling strategies, nutritional plans, and then other health protocols for things like ketosis and pregtoxemia, hypocalcemia, parasite control, et cetera. So this is just an outline, and going into all the details would require a very long and nuanced conversation. But having a good relationship with your veterinarian, your nutritionist, an equipment dealer, or someone who's familiar with milking systems can really help with fine-tuning things over time. So it can be really overwhelming to try to get all of these factors into place at the very beginning of setting up an operation.
Wow. Well, lots of information there for our producers. Thank you so much, Shannon.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you to Shannon for joining us today.
And thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Join us next Wednesday for our research-themed episode.
Hey, Aaron, what should Ontario Sheep Farmers know about?
Ontario Sheep Farmers is planning for our October 25th and 26th AGM and convention. We're really excited to be changing the location from the Nottawasaga Inn to the Cambridge Hotel and Conference Center. The reason for the change is mainly cost. We heard what you had to say about the cost of attending the convention at the Nottawasaga Inn, and we have found a new venue that'll save money for anybody staying overnight, and it includes breakfast, which we're very excited about. So that's the Cambridge Hotel and Conference Center. The Friday afternoon will be the annual general meeting for Sheep Farmers of Ontario beginning at 12:30. And then we'll have the banquet on the Friday night, followed by our convention programming on Saturday, October 26th. Please note the change to the Saturday for the convention programming. We have some exciting speakers lined up, and we will be having the theme of unlocking profit potential this year. All of our speakers will be discussing different ways to include return on investment for sheep farmers. We will share more details about the programming in the next couple of months.
If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe through your podcast app to receive alerts to future episodes. And please also consider sharing this podcast with your friends.
For more Ontario Sheep Farmers content, follow us on social media at Ontario Sheep Farmers on Instagram and Facebook, and at Ontario Sheep on X, formerly Twitter. And visit our website at ontariosheep.org.